Well, welcome everybody to another podcast of Unbolted. I'm MJ Bolt, your host, and with us today we have Jared Sessler, our the 2024 congressional candidate, and also the author of the new book, How We Broke America. Jared, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, MJ. Thanks for having me. Thanks for everybody for watching, either live or later on. Welcome, yes. Everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited. Jared sent me this book this weekend, so I got a chance to read it before today, and it's an awesome book. We're going to talk about that. But first, Jared, for the people that don't know you and know your story, you've got a fascinating story. And I just got to say, I'm very honored to have you on. I've been following you for a few years now. And so I'm super excited for other people to get to know you. Tell people about, you know, your experience, your past, how you got into politics, what led you to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Boy, that's we'll go back in time. There was a men's group that I got involved in. I highly recommend young men of any age to do this. Years ago, we did a group where we shared our life stories. And it took several hours. It would not be unusual to have a, you know, 3-hour session just listening to one life story. It's pretty incredible when you get to know people on that level, and it's very beneficial. So let me truncate that into just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
I thought I'd sit outside today because it's beautiful, but I can't figure out how to unblur my background. So I'll have to figure that out. I'm 55. I'll be 56 in August. I am married. I've been married for 29 years to my beautiful wife, Nikki. She's a brunette. I love her. She's amazing. And we have 3 kids. We homeschooled them. 2 girls and a boy. And as of about 3 months ago, we're grandparents. Our daughter wow. graduated from college last year, got married, and they had their first baby just a few months ago. She is beautiful. And we feel like we have this new lease on life, being grandparents and being able to see that little girl. We drove up to see her. She actually lives up in Spokane. Okay. We drove up to see her this weekend. So that was amazing. That's kind of my basics. I love Jesus. I think that God has blessed America for a specific reason. And I think what we're seeing now is a rebirth in that calling of what God has for us to do, not just for America and certainly not just for ourselves, but for the whole world that he created. And as far as politics, I will say that I am about as unusual and probably as good as you could get or want for someone to get involved in politics. And I know that sounds a little pompous to say that, but let me explain. I grew up pretty much not anti-political, but I was not interested. I was an American and I wanted to live the American dream and built businesses and got married and built a family. And I just thought, you know, politics was something that those people that, you know, knew about that stuff did, and it was all fine, and it really didn't affect my life too much until I started getting older and I started paying taxes, and I realized, what are they doing with all the money? And so I started getting involved and learning about it. And in the first book I ever read was really meaningful. It was probably about 25 years ago, was by David Barton. It's a book called The Original Intent. And it's an amazing book, still amazing to this day. Highly recommend reading it. And then in 2012, when Obama was reelected, it was the first time that I felt politically numb. And I realized I need to get involved. We need to get some good people. If Obama is the best we can do for the president of the United States, then we've got problems, because that means the feeding ground or the training ground for the people that are seeking higher office is filled with people that suck, and they don't know what they're doing, and they have no integrity, and they are there for life because they're, you know, they couldn't be successful in anything else. I don't know. And so I was really frustrated, primarily because Obama represented weakness throughout the world. He portrayed America as weak. When America is strong, the world is a safer place. It's a leading indicator to a safer world. And Obama did the exact opposite. And then, you know, just fast forward, I started taking Hillsdale College classes because at the time, I don't know that I had ever even read the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence. I'm sure I probably had, but it meant so little to me, unfortunately, when I was younger, that I just didn't study it. I didn't really understand it. And so for the last basically 13 years, I've been, you know, people like Dennis Prager, Epic Times, Hillsdale College, Center for Self-Governance, which is located right here in Washington State, you know, other really good publications, lots of great books. I read probably 16 to 18 books a year still to this day. And that's kind of how I got involved. And then fast forward to 2020, I was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th in 2021. I saw what happened. I was already convinced that the election was a sham. And then, you know, our congressman, Dan Newhouse, voted to impeach the best president of our lives. And I just thought, you know, I got to get involved. I knew that was a seat I wanted to run for. I just didn't know how big of a dirtbag Dan Newhouse was, how much of a traitor he was. And of course, he's protected by the Democrats because this is the most conservative district on the West Coast. So why not protect somebody who is a Democrat wearing, you know, Republican robes? So I ran in 22. I didn't even make it through the primary. It was terrible. And I learned a lot. We spent a lot of money, unfortunately, and it was tough. I ran again in 24. I won the primary decisively. I had President Trump's endorsement. We beat Dan Newhouse by more than 10%. We beat Tiffany Smiley by almost 15%. And mind you, they spent $26 million on Tiffany Smiley's name recognition in 2022 when she ran for Senate, and we still beat the crap out of her in this race. The reason why she was in the race was to split the vote to give Dan Newhouse a better chance to make sure he got in that second spot. Unfortunately, even though I won the primary, I had to face Dan Newhouse again as a so-called Republican in the general. And again, Democrats turned out, 12% increase in Democrat turnout in this race got him reelected. And you know, now we're looking at 26 that basically were from the, you know, airing of this, we're about a year from the next primary.
Yep.
I've been incredibly busy helping the Trump administration and doing a bunch of other projects that I think are incredibly meaningful, which we can certainly dive into here as we talk about that. But one of those is the book. And, you know, that's my trajectory. There are some people, and I'll just say this openly, some people think that people who lose elections should quit and walk away and go do something else. And I'm just telling you, there are circumstances for that. But not for me. And I will say that generally you learn more, you become more of a lethal weapon, you understand the underbelly more clearly, and you become more powerful, you have a stronger following, your name recognition is better, you understand your foes, you understand how you're going to get taken advantage of, and you become a more powerful tool for use for true public service, which is exactly what I'm doing and why I will never give up. I believe God's called me to this. I would never say that I'm thankful for losing the last election, but I'll tell you that I never could have imagined how much I've learned over the last year working on a lot of the projects that I've been on. I've traveled the world, basically around the world twice, it's been absolutely amazing, and I feel like I'm in an even better position with wildly more confidence to serve the people of Central Washington than I ever was before.
That's amazing. And you've said so much in there. And I know, like, you have so much in your history that's fascinating in your experience. I mean, you're a NASCAR driver, you know, you got to talk about that. I mean, I used to be a big NASCAR fan, so I was impressed by that. But you also were an engineer. I mean, you understand how things work at an integral level that has helped you give this perspective on how to fix America. Yeah, so talk a little bit more about that, Jared.
Yeah. So first of all, let me just tell you that the reason, part of the reason why my boys and my daughters are amazing too, but part of the reason why my two boys are such amazing young men is because they grew up starting from the age of 4 years old, driving race cars. And in racing, it's a very difficult challenge to ever win. It's not 50-50. Oftentimes you're competing against dozens of other competitors. And so whoever gets that winning slot, it has really done something. And you, even more so in terms of building character, you learn how to lose. And you realize how special winning is. And so you've never met anybody with more tenacity than somebody who has driven race cars. And that's really me. I love racing. I love the sport. You know, I have a lot of friends in it, you know, nationally and locally. And it's just, that's kind of my sport. It's, you know, some people have their, you know, their whatever. I enjoy, my wife loves football. I enjoy watching some other stuff, but as far as the intricate sport, that's mine. And it's one I feel most comfortable with. And it's one that I think is proper for me, given the level of tenacity that I have. And that should scare people who want to run against me, because I will not give up. I'm also not stupid. I am an engineer. I have manufacturing and mechanical engineering degrees. So I'm a process engineer. The government is a process. It's a system. It is designed to serve us and to protect us. And that really is, as you mentioned, part of the reason why this book, which, you know, reviewers are calling it one of the most unique political books ever written. Which it absolutely is. The take on it is very, very interesting. I know you've been through it already, and this is an igniter. This is a starter in so many different ways. Number one, it's a starter because it helps people individually see how they can get involved. And number two, this is only the beginning. This right here is a checklist of 46 items that I have picked. But the reality is there's probably 200-300 more that I didn't put in here. And we actually take suggestions on our website, howwebrokeamerica.com. And which, by the way, shocking, did not even intend for this, did not do any manipulation of sales or anything, which, you know, people, you know, publishers will try to get you to do. This book is sitting at the top of the political books on Amazon for 2 weeks straight, without any real promotions.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations on that. Yeah, I'm going to pull up your website so people can see it. howwebrokeamerica.com. So that's really great. So you're constantly curating even more ideas than the ideas that you laid out in your book.
Yeah. Here, because the idea is I want people to read this book, which is really a checklist. It's very simple. And I want people to open up, and, you know, and they read through, you know, chapter 23, and they're like, you know, this really resonates with me. Like, how can I get involved? Well, guess what? There's steps, there's action steps that people can take to get involved. And so, you know, and, you know, not all of us can't do everything, right? There's 435 members of the House. Each one of them has the ability to introduce legislation. They're not all going to introduce the same legislation. And it's the same for us. There's millions of Americans. We can all get involved in different ways. And we absolutely should get involved in different ways. And so so that's what, you know, I just want to encourage people to do that. Read the book, get involved, use it as catalyst. And by all means, have patience for everyone else that's involved in this, because there's so much catfighting and backbiting and people getting upset and walking away and saying, well, I'm never going to do anything with that group again. They're a bunch of, it's like, you know what? We're all imperfect people. We don't win every single time. Just keep your head in it. You know, if you look back, John Adams introduced anti-slavery legislation for 20 years in the House, and even was censured, and his voice was shut down. During that time, it's amazing history, but he kept relenting. He was relentless about it, kept going at it and pushing on something that he believed. So every single one of us, regardless of our station, whether or not we want to be active in politics or in public eye, we can be involved in and be, you know, making a difference with something in our community.
Yeah, for sure. I think you touched on such an important point right there, because I was just having conversations with a current candidate right now in the local area, and they were frustrated about the political scene, even within the Republican Party. And it takes some tenacity. And like you said, I mean, you learn so much just going through it. I ran, you know, for office in 2022, and that was a very eye-opening experience. So I think that's an important thing for people to know, like, it's not going to be easy. You got to have some thick skin, and you know, you're going to get sideways, you know, it is easy to get sideways with a lot of people, but you just got to understand this part of the political nature, and we've got to get in there to help make it better and help end this corruption. Right.
Yeah. You can't, you got to go in with the right attitude. I mean, I'm not going there to make friends. I do love some of the people there. I think there are some truly amazing people there. But you know, my people are my people. You know, I had the regardless of politics, and you know, the people that are there, I respect them a lot because diving in, get involved. But the truth is, more people that are just regular people to get involved and to understand what's going on. And when, you know, just for example, I'm sure you've sat in on situations like this where, you know, you have a county party, you have a bunch of PCOs voting on something, half doesn't even understand. Maybe the meeting has been led a little bit hastily and things are moving too quickly and people are making motions and it's hard to follow the Roberts rules sometimes as far as what's going on. And you're wondering to yourself, do you know what we're voting on? You know, and then maybe the vote goes the wrong way. You know, you can get upset, you can get frustrated, you can walk out, you can never come back, or you can take note and you can pay attention and you can learn who the good people are and you can get involved and you can undermine the corruption and be a part of the solution. And that's what I recommend people do. There's definitely reason to get upset when we lose big things, but it should never stop us from marching on to the next, especially here in Washington State. You know, people are very excited that President Trump is in the White House, which I absolutely am, of course. You know, I got to go back to Washington, D.C. a couple months ago when he signed the executive order on election integrity, which is amazing. But Donald Trump is not going to fix Washington State. I mean, there's things that he is going to do that are going to help us, and he's going to open doors like that executive order. But we've got, you know, probably 10, 15 years of work, hard work to do, and a lot of wins that we need to win in order to see change in this state. And so, you know, what's going to happen along that path? Who's going to get in the White House? Will J.D. Vance be in 28? If so, well, who's in 32? Do the Democrats take back over and send the country, you know, on a nosedive again? You know, what happens? Do we have lack of election integrity nationally, or do we get that under control? And so you kind of have to separate what's going on nationally with what the work that we have to do here in Washington State. I've got a clear plan for how we need to go about saving our state. I'm implementing that at Godspeed. And, you know, I hope to see us have a healthy state again. I hope to have an opportunity to use my position to serve in Congress, you know, to help our state. And maybe, who knows, maybe come back here and move the Capitol to Ellensburg or Yakima and run for governor.
There you go. There you go. We had a person commented actually to that fact just a second ago here. And so I think you'd have a lot of fans in running for that position for sure, Jared. Let's talk a little bit more about this, your intro in your book. It was really, well, first of all, the way you laid out this book is very unique. I mean, it is a hard hitting 1, 2, 3, here we go. You even put your story. It was fascinating because, you know, I started reading it and then I got to the appendices and I'm like, oh, here's your story. You know, you didn't even put that in the beginning of the book. You just started out chapter one. We need to do this. And you prioritize all these points, which is great, right? Because you can't do everything at once. So you need a prioritization. Yeah. So I love the way you laid it out. But in the intro, you know, I love that you said, think of me as America's engineer. And then you talked about the output of American government should be safety, security, and opportunity. Talk yeah. about that, because I think so much of government is, you know, doing other stuff that might be nice, but it's not, it shouldn't be the priority, right?
100%, 100%. This, it's very interesting. This little book from TPUSA here covers the entire Constitution. It's amazing. This might even have the Declaration of Independence in it. They're both very short, but incredibly powerful. The 10th Amendment in the Constitution, there's seven articles, which are the base framework for our Constitution, and there's 27 amendments, which have been added over time. The first 10 amendments are known as the Bill of Rights, and those were added in 1791, just a couple of years after the seven articles were originally written that kind of give us the base framework for our structure of government. If you read the 10th Amendment, which is the final one of the Bill of Rights, it is very clear that the federal government is intended to be limited. The federal government is intended to be a limited government. Our original Congress only met, you know, 3 months out of the year, and then they went home. There was no apparatus. There was no establishment around Washington, D.C. The most powerful people individually in the country are supposed to be the governors. And each state is supposed to operate somewhat autonomously while still maintaining their membership of the union so that for safety and security. And that's kind of the perspective that I go at this. And the reason I call myself America's engineer, and this name was given to me, is because I look at the structure of what it is that America is supposed to be, how it's supposed to operate. And we've just gone wildly beyond that, you know, and the federal government has become, I mean, why is the federal government involved in, just for example, our land? What authority do they have? What need do they have? You know, when the states should be responsible for that. And there's lots of other things the government gets their fingers in. And I sometimes scratch my head at the things that Congress are voting on and the bills and different things. I'm like, what makes you think that you have the authority to even be involved in such a thing? That's supposed to be left to the states. Similar to the 17th Amendment, this overtaking of the federal government in terms of its authoritarian, long-armed, unlimited nature weakens the states. It weakens the state governance. And so doing it, it causes your state legislatures to be kind of inept. And, things like the 17th Amendment cause the voters to not pay attention to what's going on in their state legislature. That's one of the insidious things about the 17th Amendment that people don't realize, is it actually takes away authority from your state, you know, your state legislature, which is supposed to be incredibly powerful. Think about this. If you have 50 sandwich shops and each sandwich shop has a different owner and they have different management and they have different styles and they're responsible for creating their own sandwiches. I heard Elon Musk opened the diner. Did you see that? Oh, the video of the diner up in LA. I'm not into Teslas, or I hate EV cars. I'll never own one, but Elon Musk is a pretty amazing dude. But they opened a diner, and it's like, it looks like a spaceship or something. And it's got all these like mega chargers or whatever, superchargers, so that people can charge their cars and get a burger. And they have,
I saw that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, where was I going before I,
you're talking about, government and the federal overreach.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the 50 sandwich shops.
Yeah. So all the sandwich shops, you think about this, each one of them is tasked with creating their own, you know, sandwich. And who's going to determine which one is the best? It's the customers, right? My daughter on her college campus had 30 restaurants. And which ones did the best, you know? Well, look at their P&L. The customers make the decision. It's the same with the states. You know, if you have this one sandwich shop that always has a line out the door and their sandwiches are amazing, what do the other sandwich shops do?
They should try mimicking them.
They send their people to that sandwich shop to find out what they're doing. How is their customer service? What is their environment like? What kind of music are they playing? What, where are they getting their ingredients? What are they doing to cook their sandwiches, or what, you know, what are they doing that's special that makes people feel special? At the Google headquarters, they have a set number of restaurants that are on site, not promoting Google, of course, but it's just an example. And they actually track the sales for those restaurants. They offer the space for free, but they track the sales, and the ones that have the lowest sales, they get evicted, and they allow new people to come in. And it constantly puts this new opportunity, you know, into the mix. And that's exactly how our states were designed to operate. Whichever one is doing the best, the other states, it's not that the citizens would be required to move to that state. Well, I'm going to move to Texas. I'm going to move to Florida. No, that's not actually the way it was designed. What the idea is that the state legislatures in Washington state would look at Texas and they would look at Florida and they would get a clue and they would realize, wow, maybe we should implement some of these policies. Maybe it'll help fix our fiscal problems. Maybe it'll help fix our social problems. And the idea is that you send your ambassadors, just like you send your people to the best sandwich shop to find out what they're doing. You send your people to those states, find out what they're doing, and then you drag back the things that are working and you implement them in your state. Think about this. Our healthcare system is one of our biggest problems in the country. Yeah. It's taking up, it's our largest portion of GDP. It's absolutely ridiculous what's happening. What if each state was tasked with designing their own healthcare system? First of all, our system in America should be called disease care. It shouldn't be called healthcare, because it's not making people healthy. Our culture is making people sick, and our system of health, or our healthcare system, is treating disease. So it should be called disease care. But what would happen?
And you say that because you went through cancer.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with terminal cancer. But what would happen if each of the states came up with their own system and you had 50 to choose from, and then you started taking the things that were working from the best of those and implementing in your state? Over time, we would end up with a really amazing system. It's called competition. Competition is birthed out of free commerce. It's birthed out of the American system of economy, which is capitalism. Competition is synonymous with capitalism. That's exactly the way the state should be operating.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about the 17th Amendment. A lot of people don't understand that. And that's one of the other things I loved about your book, is it's resource rich. I mean, you make very, just very concise statements about what needs to happen. The format is, you know, number one, you split it into sections on priorities, like we talked about. And then you say, you know, why does it matter? Why does this concept matter? Within two or three pages, you're making the points, the highest points on each of these topics. So why it matters, how does it make America great? And then the checklist action, which I love. And then you do the references, amazing references. If everybody just read this book and go and went through every single reference that you use in the footnotes, you would understand America so much better. So talk about the 17th Amendment, because a lot of people do not understand that.
Yeah, 100%. And I will credit the ridiculous number of hours that I've spent on airplanes the last few months to give me the time to have written this. The 17th Amendment, just a lot of work. It's chapter 11, but it also ties with chapter 27, which is repealing Supreme Court decision Reynolds versus Sims. So let me just summarize the 17th Amendment real quick. Originally in the Constitution, the state senators and federal senators were supposed to be picked by, the 17th Amendment has to do with federal, the senators who you send to Congress. There's 100 of them. There's two from each state. It's a statewide office. They're supposed to be picked by the state legislature, and the 17th Amendment changed that so that the senators are picked by popular vote. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, first of all, the biggest problem is it weakens the state legislatures. And you're thinking, well, why? How does it weaken the state legislature, Jared? Well, let me tell you, because when the people of Washington State know that their senators who are going to Washington, D.C. are going to be picked by the people they send to Olympia, guess what? They pay a lot more attention to the people they send to Olympia as a result of that, because they are going to be their voice in terms of who they're sending to Washington, D.C. It's a very important point. The other thing is the contrast between the House and the Senate. Okay, there's two houses within Congress. There's the Senate House, or the House of Representatives. The Senate has 100 members. The House of Representatives has 435. The Senate is made up not by population. It's made up as a representation for each state. Two senators from each state, regardless of your population. That is how it's set up. And they are elected by people that are considered to be the politically wise or the politically savvy, the people who are paying attention to politics. That's who goes to this. That's who gets to choose who goes to the Senate. The Senate is very different. By choosing to elect people that go to Senate using a popular vote, you're basically commingling the sources of your representation in Washington, D.C., which is not good, because the popular vote doesn't always make the best choice. And I don't say that to offend people. I'm just saying not everyone pays attention to the politics as much as the people who are working in it full time and really understand it. Now, there's some bad people in it. There's some good people in it. But my point is, the senators are supposed to be chosen by, you know, the sort of the political elite, the people that know what's going on, while the House is the people's house. It's sort of like the Green Bay Packers. That is the people that we choose. It's the regular people like you and me and everybody else, and they get sent to Congress. There's also a lot more of them, so there's more dilution. There's 435 of them versus 100. And so if you take this down to a state level, our states are also messed up. Because we should be choosing a senator by county instead of by district, because now it's based on a popular vote instead of by a county vote. And let's let the, you know, county commissioners, or let's let a body choose who is actually going to be our senators that come from each of the counties. The, you know, that's the kind of methodology that we ultimately need to have. And that's the reason why Reynolds versus Sims needs to be repealed, rescinded, changed, abolished, and the 17th Amendment needs to be repealed, and we need to send back the authority and the responsibility of electing and choosing our senators to our state legislatures.
Yeah, that's a fascinating, topic, and a lot of people don't understand that. And when was that 17th Amendment implemented, Jared? I don't know the date.
Oh, good question. I know a lot of these dates by heart.
Was it early 1900s or was it earlier than that?
1913. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Was it the same time as the Federal Reserve?
What's that?
It was the same year as the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, 16th Amendment was December of 1913. I didn't know when the 17th was, but it was also probably, maybe it was at the same time as the 16th Amendment. And then the Federal Reserve was enacted in February of 1913. Ironically, when you put the Federal Reserve together with the 16th Amendment, you start to see why we have the fiscal off the rails, you know, now here 112 years later that we have as a result of those two things.
That's pretty fascinating. I had not connected those dots. And I know there's other things that have come up that are like, just right before 1920, right around the same time where we had this shift in policy, either through legislation or amendments or, like we said, the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. 1913. Yeah. The early 1920s was the so-called progressive era, similar to what we are going through now and a lot of the crazy policies that are trying to be enacted. It was not a good time back then.
Wow, that's amazing. So going back, and I know we kind of jumped into the 17th Amendment because you had brought that up, but you were talking about, you know, this power dynamic of the federal government over the state government. And that's actually, I believe, chapter two. It's your second most, highest priority in your book. So restoring federalism by limiting federal overreach. The question I have on that is, how do you promote that right now, you know, that this restricting federal government overreach, but yet we have Trump doing some really important executive orders. That gets into a whole nother thing, executive orders that I know you talk on, but let's just talk about this right now on, you know, limiting boys and girls sports and boys and girls bathrooms, and some of these other really important topics that we're seeing in our states not dealt with well. So, you know, yeah. As you've been following, and I know you have very closely, the issue in our state and this fight with the federal government and our state government on this issue, you know, especially OSPI, I mean, how does that fit into your perception on this issue, on this chapter two?
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of things in here that fly in the face of President Trump and his administration, not because I disagree with President Trump. I'm fully supportive of him, you know, but I'm also, you know, friends with people in Congress that don't always support President Trump. It doesn't mean that I would do exactly what they're doing. I just, you know, I have a lot of appreciation for people who think for themselves. And there is a place for this partyism, which I think the Democrats do much better than the Republicans, but that's also because the Republicans have a higher percentage of, you know, people with a brain that are elected. And it's, you know, just easier for a lot of the Democrats to sort of follow because they follow mindlessly with things like, you know, this radical gender ideology and manipulate or mutilation of our kids and, yeah. You know, just crazy things like that. I think back to SB 5599 here in Washington State, which I actually read the markups for that. It was a perfectly good law that allowed, it required agencies, whether they were state or private, to notify parents of the whereabouts of their children. And it was marked up by Democrats in our state legislature. And I looked at the actual bill markup, and they crossed out things like notify parents and changed the wording so that there was no, there was essentially, it opened up the door for what became called as the state-sponsored kidnapping, because agencies, whether they're state or private, did not have to notify the parents where your minor child was if they were in one of these shelters or something like that. So it's just complete lunacy. But, you know, for example, you know, let's just talk about executive orders. I think executive orders are unconstitutional. I think that we have got a broken Congress that doesn't debate the issues. They don't reason with each other and are not forced to come to consensus on issues that need to happen. So what happens is you essentially have a lot of puppets that are in elected positions, because the real determination happens at the ballot box. And whichever party is in control, they now wield that control in a way that is authoritarian. And again, I fully support President Trump. There is a lot of this stuff that I think is deserved based on the illegitimacy and the just lunacy that went on during the Joe Obama administration. We need to have these executive orders. I am praising President Trump for a lot of these executive. Let me just tell you, a lot of the work that President Trump is doing with these executive orders, a lot of these. Look at read the one on election integrity that really affects Washington State big time. He doesn't actually give any directives in there. They just cite laws that are actually already in place, and they tell the DOJ to staff up because they're going to start prosecuting people in states who don't follow the laws that are on the books. How do you undo that? If you were to undo that executive order, it doesn't undo the laws that are already on the books. Now you can tell whoever the administration is in the future can tell the DOJ to stand down. But the reality is the laws are still on the books. That's an act of Congress. And so President Trump is using these in his team, Stephen Miller and many of them are, you know, they're using the laws and these executive orders to really do a lot of good. But that doesn't mean that the executive order process and the system You know, the executive is supposed to be basically lobbying Congress, you know. There's another thing in here that I hope we talk about, which is the Congressional Accountability Act. But the only people that have are designed to have a seat at the table in Congress are lobbyists, which are allowed and legal, because if they didn't allow it, it would have been happening under the table. And so even though it's completely ridiculous, it is allowed to happen in open, because it would happen under the table if it didn't. So the lobbyists have a seat at the table in Congress. Who else has a seat at the table? Well, the president is supposed to have a seat at the table, but there's really no seat at the table for the American people. Now, the president is supposed to be our seat at the table, but I feel like we ought to have another seat. I think we ought to have our own seat. And the Congressional Accountability Act, which I've written and designed and will be in DC working on fall, is a big part of that. And we have a lot of problems with regards to federal overreach, and we need to fix them. You know, there's no reason we ought to be paying property taxes. You know, I'm 55 years old. I own my property. I haven't had an income for the last 4 years, and yet I still have to write a check for $20,000 a year for property taxes and water rights. You know,
if you don't, then they levy
your property. They could take your property eventually. It's crazy. Old people, well, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you own your land, you shouldn't be taxed off of your land. We shouldn't have to pay rent to the government to have our land. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work that way. And part of the reason why we're doing that, part of the reason why we're doing that is because we have an overreach, long arm government who is taking advantage of us and is spending things like $40 million on gender studies in Pakistan that none of us would approve of.
And it's hard because I think so many people have gotten used to it for so long. You know, it was in 1913, that's when the federal government was able to start collecting income tax, right? And is that about right? 1930, right in that same time. And so
It was the 16th Amendment. And prior to that, federal income tax was only collected to help pay war debts. And it was temporary and it was approved by Congress. And then the 16th Amendment changed that. But it wasn't just the ability to be able to collect the taxes. It was the ability to force it to be pulled out by the employer, by the payroll payer. So the fact that it comes out before you ever get your check, it means it's kind of invisible to a lot of people. They just don't think about it much. You know, you might look at your stub or whatever, but you know, that's a problem. Now, if people were forced to get their paycheck and then write a check, trust me, the 16th Amendment would have been abolished a long time ago.
Right. And that's, you know, to my point is that we've just gotten used to this. It's like we're slaves in Egypt and we don't even know it. And that's part of the reason for podcasts like mine and others is let's have an honest conversation about how it should be, how, you know, we should change this, because we really aren't free. To your point about property taxes, you talked about, there was a nice quote in the intro too about liberty. And I loved this because you put in this why it matters. And you talked about, as you've said today, you know, how you really appreciate President Trump, but that liberty means every America thriving, every American thriving. And that if every leader pushed liberty, where would we be? I love that. Talk about that a little more, Jared.
Yeah, well, I think, and I give credit to Chris Ann Hall for this. She's an amazing instructor. She's so just an incredible speaker. And I have a unique story with her that helped me to see this. But there's a big difference between freedom and liberty. So I served in the Navy. And when we were overseas, when we got a chance to get off the ship in a foreign country, we were taking liberty. That's what it was called. We were on liberty. And let me tell you, when we were on liberty, we had responsibility. We had responsibility as a member of America. We had responsibility as a citizen of America. We had responsibility as a member of the military, U.S. military. And we had responsibility to the laws of the country that we were visiting. We would get a worksheet for every country that we would visit, we would get an overview of like what some of their basic laws were, things that might not jive with our laws and things that we had to abide by while we were there. My point that up is that liberty is not the same as freedom. Chris Ann Hall says liberty is freedom plus morality. So you combine morality with freedom and that equals liberty. So freedom is like this ability to just do whatever you want, you know, just abuse whoever you want, take advantage of whoever you want, you know, whatever, do whatever you want, regardless of what the impact is to the people around you. Liberty, on the other hand, comes with responsibility. And, you know, we have responsibility as American people to each other. There's a thing called the social compact. If you go back to our founding, the social compact was actually one of the first bestsellers in America. And what the social compact essentially says is that I'm responsible for making sure that my person does not violate your person in any way. And that applies to the whole of society. Now think about that. If everyone in America was to read the social compact again and to start acting like that, we would have no crime. You see, it's interesting. People look at the police and they say, well, the police are here to prevent bad things from happening. Really? Maybe that's the reason why we have so much crime in America, because people forgot that you are responsible for preventing bad things from happening. The police are there to execute justice once someone has violated the social compact. When you have violated the social compact and you've offended another person legally, the police is there to put you in handcuffs and to restrain you, because by virtue of you violating the social compact, you have given up your liberty. You have given up your freedom because you violated someone else's. That kind of teaching is what we have to give to our children and frankly, to our adults.
Yes. A lot of people have forgotten that, you know, and right here where I live in Spokane, being 30 minutes away from, or Spokane Valley being 30 minutes away from Idaho, we saw that during, you know, the great summer of unrest. I think it was 2020 when we had a lot of the break-ins and the riots and stuff. And we had it right here in Spokane downtown. And they tried to do it in Coeur d'Alene, and guess what happened? A lot of citizens showed up with their Second Amendment rights, you know, holding their weapons, and they protected those businesses. And that's what we need to do.
100%.
Yeah, for sure.
Peacefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Liberty. I love that conversation. Yeah. Chris Ann Hall, I got to see her. She did a presentation here in Spokane Valley a few years back. And, commenters. Oh, she is. Definitely amazing. Look into her. And that social compact, too. I think you raise a great point. We have got to become very well knowledge about the social compact and bring that in. And we'll bring up education, too. Well, actually, let's talk about that, because that's what another one of your chapters, another one of your priorities is Chapter 9, Promoting Constitutional Education. The quote, and there's a couple quotes in there that I wrote down. Civic ignorance leaves our youth vulnerable to government overreach. And then you said civic ignorance fuels uninformed voting and frivolous debates, with 70% of Americans unaware of basic rights. Talk about that, Jared.
Yeah, well, there's a thing called natural rights that come from God. And we are blessed to live in a country that has a constitution that codifies many of those natural rights that come from God. But if you step back and you think about that, if our natural rights come from God, are they limited to Americans, or do they span all of humanity? And that's a good perspective to think about the value of our constitution, why it is so important, and the calling that God has on us in regards to protecting those natural rights. And, you know, I think that we've done a good job of, for example, evangelizing the gospel and Christianity throughout the world. But where we have really missed is evangelizing the truth of our natural rights and encouraging, rather than having and promoting our own intelligence community, we should have been encouraging citizens of those other countries to understand their natural rights and to create their own revolution similar to what we saw in America. That's something that each of us individually can do, and especially in a day when we can communicate throughout the world so easily, you know, over the internet and stuff like that. And so so it's very important. There is a law in, it's a federal law that requires public schools to teach. There's a Constitution Day, which often for the ones who follow it, they kind of make it Constitution Week because there is so much to learn. And, you know, I know that some school boards force this and make sure that they actually do teach it. I think it's a hat tip at best. It's not enough. I think that we ought to have major curriculum around our rights as human beings. I think that's very important. I think that what we need to do is we need to help people to think critically. I know as we homeschooled our kids, we were involved in a homeschool co-op, and the high school years were involved in a group that was like, it was like a high school class, but it was called rhetoric. And the whole point of rhetoric was to help you to communicate both audibly, written, and to hear and to think critically, and to cite your sources and to understand what you really believe. And unfortunately, we've got way too many people in this country who flip on CNN or, you know, MSNBC or whatever, and they listen to what they say and it sounds like it makes sense and they believe it, you know, and then they go spout it off. And so I think this is very important. I think it's, you know, you can get these little books from TPUSA, Charlie Kirk's organization. It's a really cool one. It's got a lot of visuals and stuff in it, more so than some of the other ones. But also the Federalist Society, I think they either give these away or sell them. And there's one other one that I've gotten them from a bunch of times, which I don't recall the name of the organization, but it's in DC. But yeah, get a copy of this. I mean, 20 minutes or so, you can read the whole Constitution. It might take you a little more time than that to actually understand what some of the things mean. You know, I always laugh at the 21st Amendment because it is so confusing. It's like, how does that undo the 18th Amendment? It doesn't make any sense, you know, just by the text. And so anyway, there's stuff like that that takes a little more time and study. But it's not that difficult. Now, if you contrast this little tiny booklet, which is our federal constitution, to most state constitutions, you're talking about a manual that's a full 8.5 by 11 and 100 pages thick. I mean, it's a whole different, you know, thing. And I think that is, I'm not saying it's necessary. I'm just saying that it's demonstration of where the real responsibility for people's lives is at. Right. It's at the county level. It's at the state level. It shouldn't be at the federal level. Federal level should keep us safe, keep us secure, and ensure that we have opportunities.
Right. And that education piece is so important. I think that's, like you mentioned, a lot of our kids are not learning the full truth about our constitutional, you know, our constitution, what it talks about, our natural rights, as you mentioned. Yeah. And so, you know, like you said, unfortunately, then it causes people to have this government overreach because you don't know better and you don't know that shouldn't be happening. So it's such an important part. You talked about natural rights a little bit. I want to ask you about the separation of church and state myth.
Yeah.
You brought that up a few times in your book, and I think this is a common misconception.
Yeah, it is an incredible misconception. It was never a law. I love the ruling recently that made it clear that churches can endorse people.
Yep.
You know, I think that sort of kind of goes along with the same thing, but people don't understand sort of the history of church and state. And it's quite interesting, but it's very important that people realize that when you vote, I had a guy in church was a few years ago. I was really shocked, but it was during the 2016 election, and it was before the 2020 election. Was it? No, I think it was 2016. Sorry. Anyway, they were saying, well, you know, who do you think we should vote for? You know, I'm like, is it not obvious? You know, and their position was, well, you know, we ought to give both sides a try, you know, thinking of Democrat versus Republican. You know, I'm like, how are you a member of a Christian church and you're even considering voting Democrat in today's age? Like, to me, this is the best example of the fallacy that the left has allowed us to believe in regards to the separation of church and state. Let me just be clear. If you are a Christian, if you are a God-fearing person from just about any religion, and you want to see the things that you believe furthered, then you should vote for the party that is going to further those. You know, if you believe that life begins at conception, then every single vote with a dark black pin in the little box should be for Republican, period. You know, you should always vote based on the party that is going to engender a movement towards the things that you believe. And so, so there is, and there should be no separation between church and state. When you elect someone, you should elect. Who are they? Jared Sessler is a family man who homeschooled his kids, who ran and built a multinational business, who gave it all up to run for Congress. He loves Jesus. He wants to see he believes that God ordained and orchestrated America, and he wants to see that furthered. Check. Yeah. Elect that guy. Elect a bunch of other people like him, and America is going to be setting sail on liberty, freedom, security, and opportunity for decades to come. That is the way we ought to be thinking, especially when people sit in the pews, have no clue what they're even talking about politically. They ought to trust people who have taken the time. And especially, let me just say this as a kind of a personal aside back to your comment about America's engineer. I don't think every member of Congress needs to have the intellect of an engineer. I do think every member of Congress needs to have the integrity and the morality that is straight from the Bible. I think that's valuable, but I don't think that they have to be so incredibly smart. I think one of the incredible attributes of our system as designed was that you could take a house of 435 people and they could do a great job running the country. Without a lot of, you know, you don't have a lot of lawyers and you don't have a lot of attorneys or engineers or doctors or people with educations or whatever. I mean, this MJ, if you were to go around and just ran like 435 and drop them into Washington, D.C. and replace the five that were there, would be better off? Absolutely. You would be better off. Reason is, yeah, is that for so many years, most of us have been doing life thinking that the political class was doing their job. And we thought that they were kind of special. Like they understood this stuff. They know what they're doing. They're doing the best for us. They're certainly not corrupt. There's no money going under the table. They're not funding things that we disagree with. You know, when things go the wrong way, it's just sort of happenstance. It's by accident. You know, they have to negotiate, they have to, you know, do their thing. Instead, realizing that those people are willing to go, most of us were just doing it. And I would argue that a lot of them, not universal, but a lot of them would struggle to be successful in anything else. Because other things take brains and they take understanding and they take integrity and they take hard work.
Yep.
Hazel's coming to visit us.
Hazel, who's Hazel? Is this? What a sweetie!
We're doing Hazel.
Gorgeous.
Come say hi. No doubt she was laying in the shade somewhere.
Yep.
Chilling. And then she probably heard me. I must have gotten loud.
Yeah, well, you got passionate, and that's a good thing. We need that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I see my latest video on Dan Newhouse sponsoring this Dignity Act, co-sponsoring the Dignity Act, which is mass amnesty for 40 million people. I got so fired up. My wife, after the video, she never says anything like this. She was like, "Wow, you're pretty passionate about that." Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this stuff. It's very important.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's so much we can talk about your book. I want to talk about that as well, because this is super important. This race is critically important. You're running again for 2026, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not giving up. President Trump's not on me. Washington representative. And we're going to get it here. This is the most conservative district on the West Coast. We deserve to have a representative that is commiserate with this district, not one that is a Democrat wearing, you know, rhino's clothing or Republican clothing.
Yeah. So in your internet's been cutting in and out, and I'm hoping that it's coming through maybe clearer than it is on my end. But I don't know, Jared, if there's anything you can do on your end, but hopefully it's coming through clear. I'm catching a majority of what you're saying, but it's just been a little, you know, rubber bandy.
I'll stay on here while I'm transitioning, but I'll go inside. It's smoking hot out here, and it could be the computer is getting hot, and that might be affecting the connection or something, but I can make a little transition here to go inside. And
okay. Sounds good. Are you in Tri-Cities? Is that right? Or is it the Yakima
area? Yeah, Prosser. I live in Prosser.
Okay. Yeah, awesome. Beautiful farmland. I love that. It's a lot like the area I grew up in, where it's kind of wide open farmland spaces, irrigation. Yeah. I grew up setting siphon tubes. So I love that area, the farmland area. So, you know, you just brought up a really important point that I was hoping to talk about, is this legislation that Dan Newhouse is sponsoring, correct? And so talk about this, because this should tell everybody about who Dan Newhouse is and who he isn't. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called the Dignity Act, and you can look it up. If you go to my YouTube channel, which is just at Jared Sessler, you can see a video I'm just plugging in here.
Okay.
My computer is pretty warm. I was out in the sun. You can see the sheen. My phone is overheated. Oh. See the.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. That's like probably really, a good call.
It's really hot. So hopefully the connection is better here.
It is.
But the Dignity Act is basically a mass amnesty bill. It would, you know, President Reagan, one of his biggest regrets was the executive order that he signed, the law that he signed that allowed ended up getting used in courts for, what became mass amnesty of probably 20 plus million people. This one would be upwards of 40 plus million. And the only thing they're required is that they're required to pay $1,000 and 1% of their income for 5 years. And there's just such lunacy in this whole thing. There's a deeper issue here that I want to try to get across to people. But let me just say one of the points that is in this bill is it says that it's if you're involved in a gang, like a foreign terrorist gang, then you're not eligible. But the next paragraph in the bill itself says that the government agencies are allowed to use federal or state databases to determine if the people they're filing. So it's just such DC talk. You know, they're saying, well, we're not going to allow gang members. It says it right in there. Oh, but we're not going to allow the authorities to actually check to see if the people who apply are in a gang. You know, it's just such doublespeak and typical stuff. That's the kind of thing that Dan Newhouse is co-sponsoring. But let me just step back for a second and help people understand something here. This is entirely counter to everything President Trump and Tom Holman and Kristi Noem are trying to do to help make America more safe and more secure. And let me explain why. Even introducing this bill is an offense to everything that they are doing. And the reason is this: we can only deport maybe a couple million people, if we're lucky, using our, the ICE and Border Patrol and things like that. It's just too difficult to round up that many people. So they need to establish a sense of desire for deportation. So they want to make it so uncomfortable for those people that they just go back to their home country where they're from. Now, introducing a bill like this gives those people hope that, well, maybe we should stay. Maybe we should ignore all the signs on the wall right now that tell us that we should probably go home. And let's just talk about what those are. $1,000 if you return to your homeland. Free air flights if you return to your homeland. You can self-deport on the app, the CBP app, CBP One. You can self-deport. And if you do, then you will be eligible to come back in the country legally in the future. If you don't, then you won't be able to. Alligator Alcatraz. What's the point of Alligator Alcatraz? I don't care if they ever put anybody there. The fact that it was promoted in the way that it was, it scared these invaders and it's causing them to go home. How about the El Salvador prison videos? Do you think that causes people to want to go home? I think so. They don't want to be in the El Salvador prison. How about this talk of renovating Alcatraz? What's the point of that? People have to realize that President Trump is always negotiating. And part of what's going on right now is he is trying to convey to these invaders that they need to go home. And when you defund them, when you cancel their free cell phones, when you stop providing a Visa card with $1,000 or $5,000 a month or whatever they're getting on it, guess what? It starts to become more attractive for these people to return to their homeland. And that's exactly what President Trump is doing and his team. And it's the exact opposite of what this Dignity Act is trying to do. And the reason why Dan Newhouse's name should not be on it, but he sells himself out by the fact that he co-sponsored this bill. And it is complete offense to the American people and certainly to the people of Central Washington.
Wow. Yeah, it's horrific. And like I said, and as you've said, when it shows you who Dan Newhouse is, right? It's showing his true colors. The chameleon, is stripping away and we're seeing true colors here. So people, we got to help people become informed voters and remind 100%. Them of these, awful things that Newhouse has done. I mean, like you said, he voted for Trump's impeachment back in 2020. I mean, that was a huge red flag, So what is it about the election, like Jared, like what have you learned? We know who Newhouse is. He's showing his true colors right now. What is, what has made it so challenging to beat him in previous elections?
So in the 22 election, Lauren Culpran, through his connections of running for governor previous, he was able to get President Trump's endorsement during that race. There were 7 Republicans. We split the vote. There was 1 Democrat. So the Democrats' votes were organized and they got behind 1 candidate. And that candidate won the primary and Dan Newhouse was 2nd because he got the most Republican votes. The next round, there was 3 Republicans. It was me, Dan Newhouse, and Tiffany Smiley. I had President Trump's endorsement, continue to have President Trump's support. And I won the primary by more than 10% over Dan Newhouse. Unfortunately, Dan Newhouse ended up 2nd again, which allowed him to go to the general. In Washington state, we have a jungle system, which means the top 2 vote getters in the primary go to the general party. And so you could have 2 people from the same party going against each other. So the general, and I have President Trump's endorsement, and Dan Newhouse is very sympathetic to and proven that, very against President Trump and everything that he is trying to do. Who do you think Democrats are going to support?
Right.
So Democrat turnout in the last this in pre.
We're having some connection issues again there. I don't know. Is your bars looking okay? Maybe it's on my end, but it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, keep talking. I'm going to trust it's coming through.
I'm a Starlink here. It's pretty strong.
Yeah, mine is. Me too. Yeah. Go, yeah, well, we yeah, it's probably network, just. So. Yep, you're good. So yes, keep talking. So you've got. So
anyway, yeah, there was a. Yeah. So there was a 12% higher turnout for Democrats in the general for Dan Newhouse. In addition to that, Dan Newhouse targeted the older voters in our district and scared them by lying to them and telling them that I wanted to raise taxes. That was a complete lie, and he knows it. And I confronted him on it in person. And so some of the older voters who didn't know that Dan Newhouse was lying, they voted for him as well. And so he was able to pull it across the line and win the general with that. And so, you know, we go on, we have less than a year to the next primary. You know, I just continue to get stronger, smarter, better. Some of the projects that I've gotten to do this last year have been absolutely amazing. I feel like I have a better view of the underbelly of what's wrong with our country and what's possible when humanity is devoid of God. And I understand what President Trump is trying to do, and I think I can help. I'm not only helping, I think, in articulating those positions, not just in this book project, but in a couple of the documentaries that I've done and some other travel. And I got to be in the Middle East for 3 weeks ahead of his trip there. And so I just feel like I'm a better candidate and a better, I guess, better person. You know, my daughter said one time I was speaking at an event, and I said, I'm not a politician. I'll never be a politician. So don't put me in that category. You know, I said something like that. It's very, you know, candid. I think people understand what I was saying, you know, when I was trying to say something like that. No, I'm not part of the corrupt ring. I'm just never going to be. I've already been successful in my life. There's nothing I need to add. There's no check boxes left on my list of things I want to do. The best thing I get to do the rest of my life is watch what my kids do with their lives and play with our grandkids and you know, use my talents and what God's put in me to help our country. So, but what my daughter said was telling. We were driving home from that, and she said, you know, Daddy, you should never say you're not going to be a politician, or you don't want to be a politician, because it's an incredible honor to be a politician. You're a representative of the people, and just because unethical, immoral people have messed up the positions and infected the seats doesn't mean that somebody like you can't go in and disinfect it and be a great politician and bring honor to the title.
Wow. What a great,
yeah. That's from the mouth of babes.
Right. That's awesome. And, yeah. And I agree, you know, so I think our media has dirtied it so bad and made, you know, promoted all the bad stuff and not the good stuff and not very true statements like that, that it has made it ugly for a lot of people. And a lot of people don't pay attention for that exact reason, because they're like, oh, that's ugly. That's nasty.
Yeah.
I don't like politics. Well, you know what? Politics affects every single thing you do. It affects your livelihood. I mean, the value of the dollar, we haven't even talked about the Federal Reserve yet, but yeah. The value of our dollar, people are hurting. I mean, I just saw where somebody's having to go back and live with their parents because they can't make it on a very good salary. They, you know, rent is $2,400 where they live for a, you know, just a common place, and they can't make it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I feel bad. I mean, my kids are all in their early 20s, you know, and just the, you know, the difficulty that they have ahead of them in terms of being able to buy a piece of the rock, you know, to buy a piece of land and to build, or, you know, buy their own home. And, you know, that's kind of always was like, you know, the real American dream. You know, a lot of us wanted a Corvette and, you know, a cowboy hat or whatever, but, you know, really it's owning your own property. That's kind of the measure of success, I think, in terms of the American dream. And that's difficult nowadays. I mean, just the fact, just being housed is difficult, and it's expensive, and it's problematic. And all of that was driven by, you know, inflation driven by the Democrats. And I don't see a lot of that stuff returning down to where it was. To be
President Trump's policies. But the truth is, the real improvement is going to be over time, and it's going to be increased wages. And, you know, that's just going to take time for it to come about. And it's really sad. But yeah, it's tough for a lot of people right now. But I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think the consumer sentiment is high. And I think that's going to help the country a lot. And, you know, it'll also unlock a lot of capital to start moving around again. So,
right. And with people like you that really understand that, I mean, you know, as we've talked through this conversation, there's obviously a lot of layers of our government that aren't perfect, right? And we need to peel back these layers. And so executive orders, people like you understanding what is truly wrong with the foundation. Why are we not getting these better outputs that are creating a safe and a thriving economy and thriving Americans, right? And right. So it really is so critical that people understand that we've got to get people like you, Jared, elected to help really get at the right issues. We are not sending people back there to go play Congress or to go play with politics or, you know, we're serious about this. They're going to go back and really be intentional and strategic about how do we fix America and how do we make it better for everyday Americans to, you know, live with liberty and thrive. You're right. Yeah. It's very important. 100%.
Yeah. 100%. We have to win. And I think that's one of the biggest things that President Trump is making sure that we do is he's making sure we win. And, you know, I've had multiple people come up to me the last few months and just are giddy. They're just like, every day is Christmas. President Trump's got something new. You know, I'd say pretty soon, one of the things I'd watch for is an announcement on Greenland. I think that'll be coming relatively soon. I was honored to travel to Panama. I did a documentary you can find on YouTube on Panama. It's very interesting. I've been there before. We actually took our family there. When was it? I think it was 2014 or something. I can't remember for sure, but we did a family trip there. It's pretty cool. And most people don't know the history of the Panama Canal. They also don't know that the new Panama Canal was opened in 2016 and it was paid for by the United States. And so anyway, it's kind of interesting. And what's even worse than that is the new canal was designed to support the post-Panamax ships from China. So quite interesting. We provided military support. Most people don't know that Panama is a country because the United States backed their freedom against Colombia. Colombia took over the Panama territory, you know, back in the late 1800s from Spain, and they didn't want to let go of it, and they didn't want to sign a treaty with the United States because they didn't feel like they were getting enough money to be able to build the Panama Canal. And so the United States said, "Fine, we'll just support the Panamanians and their freedom," and they sent the military, U.S. military, to Panama to protect the Panamanians while they were ensuring their freedom. And then, of course, you know, that led to the signing of the Panama Treaty you know, the land that is permanently designated as the U.S. control and then us pouring ourselves into building that canal. And so anyway, that project, we did another documentary on the Klamath River dams in California that were removed, four dams down there. They removed absolute and utter and complete devastation. That video is in editing right now, so it'll be out probably in the next couple of weeks. But, oh, unbelievable. If there was ever a case to be made for stopping to remove these dams and a strong case to build many more dams, which I will advocate for, it was that story. And so I was honored to be able to tell that story, you know, and it was really good. So I've traveled back to Washington, D.C. a number of times. This last few months, I've gotten to speak in front of many members of Congress in their meetings. Last time I was there, I got invited to the Army parade, which was awesome. And I got an invitation just out of the blue. I didn't solicit it or didn't even tell anybody I was going to be there. And they asked me to come and speak. And these are groups of members of Congress I'm always pinching myself when I'm going. I was like, what do you guys want to hear from me? Like, what do I know that you guys don't know, you know? And what I find out is they're so busy and they're so covered up and so in it that they don't have the opportunities to do a lot of the things that I do, and the travel and the study and just everything. So, and they just, they, a lot of them didn't come from the base and the framework that I came from, right. You know, of, you know, coming from a broken family and building a life through the means of opportunity and, you know, getting married by God's grace, staying married, raising a family, being successful in business. And all that stuff has taught me so much. And, you know, it's incredibly valuable, which, by the way, let me just say something about opportunity. Opportunity is meaningless without work. The people that the invaders that have come to the United States over the last few years came here for the opportunity, but they were not interested in the work. The people that came here 30, 40 years ago, even 20 years ago, especially a lot of the agricultural workers and things like that, they came here for the opportunity, knowing that it required work in order to make anything of it. That's kind of the story of America these days. And so I do say that the federal government is responsible for ensuring the opportunity, but who's responsible for ensuring that people are willing to work? Well, this goes to one of God's pillars. God has placed three pillars into America, three pillars. Number one is marriage, from which comes children and family. Number two is church. And number three is government. Read the Bible. They're all defined in there. And they're also all the pillars that are under attack in America today. And the aspect of the American dream is a equation of combining opportunity with work. And the opportunity is protected by the federal government and provided by them. And the work is encouraged and inspired by good parenting. And the American dream is what follows.
Right.
So you can do all this other alternate lifestyle stuff. You can do whatever you want, but you're never going to truly experience the freedom and the happiness and the joy that God has for us if you don't follow his process.
Right. And we have way too many policies that are incentivizing not working, not following that, you know, positive formula. And it's not compassion. I mean, we have policies right here in Spokane, downtown Spokane, that they say, oh, these are, you know, it's a, this homeless compassion resolution, enabling people to stay in the junk and not get better is not compassion.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but the government should not be in the compassion business.
No.
Compassion is, my oldest son, it used to bother him to see homeless people. And so I said, why don't you make an extra sandwich every day and just keep it with you? And then when you see a person that is in need, you can give it to them. That's compassion and that's appropriate. And that's what we ought to be doing as American people. But we shouldn't be saying, well, the government is going to take care of it. And then expecting those government agencies to somehow solve this problem with compassion. It's terrible. Just think about the immigration issue. All of these people under the Obama and Joe Obama administrations were invited here. They opened the door, they flung it open, they invited them here, and they created a modern day slavery situation with this glass ceiling. And it's somehow compassionate to allow those people to stay.
No.
It's not compassionate. It's not fair. Go back to incentives. Very smart farmer, Rob Valikoff in Yakima, just pounded this into my head, and I keep seeing it come up over and over again. Humans respond to incentives. Let's go back to this invader thing and what President Trump is trying to do. President Trump is trying to make it more comfortable to deport yourself than to stay here. That is, when you look at every single thing, alligator Alcatraz, El Salvador video, prison video, Alcatraz remodel, $1,000 to deport, CBP Guam to deport. We're trying to make it more attractive for you to go back to your country than to stay here. Stop paying for your food and your housing and your rent and your cell phone.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's illegal. Hello, it's illegal to come here illegally and not go through the proper channels. If any of us...
drives me nuts.
You or I did something illegal, we would be expected to, have the consequences.
It's almost like, hey, the first thing that you do illegal is okay, as long as you don't compound it with more things. Here's my problem with this whole thing. I mean, number one, this is my biggest problem, okay? Why is it, whenever you hear someone say, well, we need to deport these people as soon as they break the law. Okay, so let me just understand you. So when an invader harms an American citizen, we should deport them. How is that justice?
Yeah, they've already done something.
How illegal. How is that fair to the American people who want to be safe and deserve to be safe, number one? Number two, where is the justice? You send them back to their country, and what do? Tell their country, like, hey, they broke the law, so we're sending them back. Is their country going to prosecute them? No, there's no justice in that. So by allowing them to stay here, you steal freedom, you steal liberty, you steal security, and when they do break the law, we rightfully should house them in a prison so that they can pay the sentence for the thing that they've done wrong, which means that we continue to pay for them.
Right.
So I would rather go with you and say, you know what? They broke the law by coming here illegally. We should deport them as a result of that.
Yep. It's insanity. And that's what we need, people that will lay this out in plain English for people and understand what the consequences are. And I think you and I agree on those things, on a lot of other stuff as well. 100%. But for some reason, you know, unfortunately, the media and some other people are distracting that conversation. Yes. Read this book, everybody. Get this book. It is a blueprint for how to fix America. How We Broke America and a Checklist to Fix It by Jared Sussler. Yeah. Jared, what final thoughts that you have for people besides get this book? And I, you know, when I was reading it, it was making me think about all the local action things that I can do as well.
Yeah.
Which I think you tie in here. You make some great suggestions. And so it's helpful, not just for the federal aspect and perspective, but also for your local. And we cannot forget about how important it is to focus on local, you know, action. Local action equals national impact. Some great General Flynn says that all the time, right? So, yeah, final thoughts for people. It's been a fascinating conversation. We've covered a lot of ground, and you're so busy doing so many things. What would you leave with everybody?
Well, thank you, MJ. Thanks for having me. And I would just tell people that, you know, you've got to get involved. If you read the Declaration of Independence, there's a section in there that says that under tyranny, men will do nothing. It's talking about men and women. Basically, the government kind of takes a little bit advantage of them, and they're like, oh, well, it's not too bad yet. It's not too painful. And it goes on to say that until such time that the tyranny becomes insufferable, means that it's too uncomfortable. We're now going to stand up and we're going to defend ourselves. We're going to go back and defend our natural rights. We're going to learn what our natural rights actually are. Most people are not there yet. And I actually am sort of tied on this. I'm struggling because on one hand, I want us to get there, but then that means that we're going to experience a lot more pain. But on the other hand, I wish people would just stand up and get involved. So for the people that are interested in doing something and they feel like they're not being effective in whatever they're doing, then get a copy of this book, because I'll tell you that there are, it lays out a methodology for you to be able to get involved in an issue that will make a difference. And this isn't about each of us, you know, sort of being the Donald Trump, you know, Elon Musk personalities that, you know, encompass a huge amount of, you know, the problems. It's just pick your lane, fix what's in your lane, and just work on that. You know, get that fixed. And this book kind of breaks up a lot of the issues and things that need to happen. It briefly explains, it's really, each chapter is an introduction to a topic. It's not, and it doesn't cover the whole thing, ain't even close. Right. And it allows you to go, you know, this sounds interesting. I think I could work on this, you know. And I'll also say, just as a personal plug, two things. Number one, if you've got money and you're not involved and you don't really want to take the time to get involved, then give me some of your money, because we were outspent 13-1 in the general.
Wow. 13-1.
What's that?
13-1.
Yeah. They spent over $3 million. Every 7 minutes in the district, there was a negative ad on Jared Sussler. They were all lies. You can talk to anybody. I mean, it's just incredible what they did. So that's number one. Number two is, If you want to get involved in my campaign, I've got a myriad of projects we're working on that are incredible. There's research stuff, there's video editing, there's Trump travel. There's, you know, this Congressional Accountability Act is going to be amazing. Some of the work we're doing with that, writing bills for Congress, helping members of Congress with different things. There's just so many different things to do. So I would just encourage you to get involved and, you know, educate yourself, get involved with Center for Self-Governance, start taking some of their classes, sign up for Hillsdale College, which is free, take some of their classes and, you know, just make something of your time. I will say that for years, ever since I was a young man, I believed that prayer was an investment in the future. And I think as you pray, it seems like it might have an effect on the future. And so that's just kind of something that I have always felt. And similarly, I will say that I think every moment that you invest in helping in this category, you are investing in America's future. And I think we need that. So thank you for having me today. Please get your copy of How We Broke America. Help us stay on the bestsellers list for another week. And what do you think of the cover? You like the cover?
I love the cover. I love the back.
The money's leaking out the bottom.
Yep. It's awesome. It's very awesome. The back has got some great endorsements and quotes as well. I especially like the and very much appreciate the note that you gave me too. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Jared. And it means a lot to me. So go to howwebrokeamerica.com to find out more information about how to get this book. You said it's on Amazon, probably all the book places. Yeah. And then Jared, how can people help with your campaign? You know, like Jared said, it takes money. Unfortunately, money does influence when campaigns can run a ton of ads on TV. There's still people that watch the mainstream media, you know, and they're influenced by these things, even though they're inaccurate and wrong and telling lies, they get influenced by that. Jared needs the money. Great, you know, people like Jared that are running these campaigns, they need the money to help combat that. So Jared, where can people go to help donate to your campaign?
Yeah, just go to jaredforcongress.com. And, you know, we've only got about 10 months or so before we really need to start spending money for the primary. So, you know, if you could donate $50 a month, that would equate to $500 when it matters. That's great. If you can do $100 a month or $1,000 a month, whatever you can do, I certainly appreciate it. And it's what we need to do. You know, my wife and I, we've been some of the biggest donors. We've essentially given away our life savings to this project. And, you know, that it just costs money. Unfortunately, that's the way we reach people. So also endorsements are great. You know, you get online and tell people that you're supporting me. Also, you know, encouraging, you know, Republican parties to continue to support me, the Washington State Republican Party to continue to support me. And, you know, those do make a big difference and help with fundraising and stuff. So I'm just going to keep fighting. You know, President Trump is continuing to support me. He wants Dan Newhouse out, especially with this choice. He co-sponsored this mass amnesty. That's just an absolute antithesis of what the American people need and what President Trump is fighting for. And it's time to disinfect this seat here in Washington's 4th District.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we need to do that. Get involved locally, get involved in your local county GOP, become a PCO. By the way, the state party has now contracted with the Center for Self-Governance, and now they made the training free for any PCO in the state. Amazing. And so that's an awesome deal. I actually took it. Rob Chase told me about it back in, I think it was just on the school board. So I probably need to retake it because I think it's probably been updated. It was 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm called the America's engineer, but I'll tell you, my mentor is Mark Herr. I learned from him. He's amazing. And Pam Leslie, both just wonderful people, and they're amazing running Center for Self-Governance. And they have thousands of people all across the country that have learned from them. So, it's really good stuff.
Good training. Well, Jared, thank you again for all you're doing, for all the blood, sweat, and tears that you have put into this and you continue to do. You're obviously not doing it just for, you know, nefarious reasons or egotistical reasons. You are a real, you know, just down to earth, great person. And I've had such a pleasure getting to know you better. And just whatever we can do to help support you, come on here anytime you want to help get a message out or want to talk about an issue or, you know, help get people motivated. You guys, ballots have dropped here locally. This is something really important in our state in Washington. You need to vote on those local elections. And if you don't know who to vote for, contact your county Republican Party. They know. And these elections are critical. They're all nonpartisan. So be careful, because somebody may, like Jared said, you know, have clothing on that looks like Republican. But again, your county parties will know. Get your ballots in. This is how we change our locals. We can't just leave it up to our Congress and our federal government and Trump. We have to do what we can here locally. So vote, hope, support Jared. Yeah. And blessings to you and your family, Jared.
Thank you. Really. Thanks for all you're doing, MJ. I really appreciate it. God bless you. Thanks, everyone.
Blessings to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.